Hello and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and the peony in my buttonhole, it's Dave Vitti.
Hello.
Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Now then, Dave.
How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Go on, get it out of the way. Go on, mention the fact that I've got a smart shirt on this time, because last time you said that I looked like a Norwegian fisherman in my heavy knit jumper.
Well, do you know, it looks like a date shirt. Like it's going out on a date, because you never wear a posh shirt.
Well, no, do you see, the thing is, though, that sometimes the way that I look at it is that you have to dress for the occasion, right? And so what I thought is, because of what we're doing today and the gentleman that we are talking to, this gentleman is the entertainment equivalent of fine dining. And as such, sometimes you have to wear a collar.
Oh, but yes, and thanks, because now you've made me feel great. Anyway, look, let's get on to who our guest is today. Now, he's probably best described as being an entertainment powerhouse. He's an actor, a comedian, a singer, a TV presenter. He's basically one of those bloody annoying people that can do everything great.
Yeah.
It is, of course, the one and only Mr. Brian Connolly. Brian, how are you? Was that good enough intro?
I like that. I quite like that. I mean, you could have gone humble, shy, modest, tough, deadly, resourceful, at the peak of his physical fitness and mental alertness, handsome, debonair. But I'm quite happy with that. At least you got your name right. It didn't say Bradley Walsh.
Exactly. Or Bradley Connolly or anything like that. All of those. But listen, it's great to have you here, Brian. Thank you very much for joining us.
It's very nice. I love listening to the show. I love cars, and I think you two are very knowledgeable, and it's just wonderful to be asked to do it. Although I did get my management to ring you, and I'm very glad that you accepted, and I'm very happy to be sitting here in my lounge.
Well, listen, we're glad that you're here. Obviously, look at that for a lounge, by the way. Can we just have another little pan? Look at that. I mean, somebody's doing well, aren't they?
I tell you, stick to comedy, lads. Forget those cars. Just learn jokes. Learn jokes.
So talking of which, Mr. Connolly, you're a busy man because you are currently on tour. This is your third farewell tour. Am I right?
It is. That's what it's called, the third farewell tour to date. And we're having a lot of fun out on the road doing what I do best, because I do get withdrawal symptoms. And I'm sure we'll talk about it. But, of course, I was in EastEnders for the last 3 years. Yeah. Got up to Christmas, done pantomime, and now I'm finishing EastEnders, and now I'm out and about. I mean, it's not a full-on tour. It's just, you know, cherry-picking all the nice weekend dates. You don't want to be in a theatre on a Tuesday, you know. You've got to be there on a Saturday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So I'm doing that, and what I'm very excited about, and, you know, a little insight, obviously, the pundits don't know this, but my daughter's part of the show as well.
Oh, is she?
She's 22. And she does stand up and she does sing. And a couple of months before we started the tour, I managed to find a video just popped up. I weren't looking for it, of me and Lucy in the lounge singing Somewhere Beyond the Sea, somewhere. She's stumbling through it. She's 2 years old. So I show them a bit of that because I've got a big screen on stage. And they don't expect anything. And then I start singing it for real. And then Lucy walks on and it gets the biggest reaction ever. Not huge applause. It's just melt. So, and then we do a bit together. And then it's just a lovely evening. And I use a big video screen and it ticks all the boxes where I talk about what I've done and who I've met and the shows I've done. And really for me, It's a vocation. I just love being out there. And my favourite bit of the show is right at the beginning, I tell them that, you know, you lot have got to ask me a question in about 2 hours' time. Yeah. And so as we're winding down, I get them to ask me questions. And that, you know, I really get a buzz out of that because I say I'm at an age where I'll talk about anything and everything, you know. So we do, and it can go on for quite some time. And I know, of course, you know, they've all got to go and catch their bus home, you know, while I've got the Bentley waiting there warming up, you know.
Hey, Brian, tell us about this this night at the Palladium you've got coming up with Bradley Walsh, you mentioned earlier, yourself, Shane Ritchie, and the squeaky man, Joe Pasquale. What's all that about?
Well, it's been on the back burner for, I can't tell you
decades,
how long.
Decades, probably, you know? No?
So yeah, it has. And we kept saying, we should do this. And then Brad came to see me in Panto this year in Milton Keynes. I said, Brad, we should do this, man, you know. And then a night fell free at the Palladium. Someone had booked, meant to be there, and that fell through due to illness. So suddenly Brad got this date at the Palladium, and then he said, let's do it, you know, the four of us. And then we just put it on social media, no publicity, nothing, and it sold out within 3 days. Wow. The stalls and the circle virtually sold out in the first day, and then the upper. So it sold out, and that blew us all away, you know, the response to that. And yeah, and so I always said, we've got to do this, and we've got to call ourselves the Pratt Pack. So that's what we're called, and we've mapped it out like the Rat Pack, where we all come on at the beginning, do a little bit, then we all do a little 10-minute spot each. We're still weaving in and out of each other's acts, and then the second half, we do have a bar, and we sit there, and we just have fun and sing songs, and we've got a great big orchestra. The shame of it is, we've never done it before. So, and you know, and so virtually our dress run is at the London Palladium. So, you know, I said, oh, isn't it a shame we're not somewhere else, just a little theatre just to get it going, you know. But we're hoping, well, I know Brad really wants to do some more next year, you know. So that's fun, you know. And we're at an age now where we can put our egos away to a degree and just have some fun.
There's not many people that could book the Palladium and then work out what they're going to do afterwards.
Well, that is true. It is what not to do. Brad keeps going, look, we've got to keep it tight because we... But the thing is, we have really struggled with rehearsing. We were there yesterday. What time did we start? 1 o'clock. I'm not joking. We've probably done about 45 minutes of actually rehearsing, and the rest was just reminiscing. Joe Pasquale reminisces with people he don't even know. Waffles. We just sat there and we're all on a different page. We all know about those early days and those summer seasons, those pantomimes, those, you know, the nightclubs, you know, and everything else. So it is, and we've got a moment in the show. We've got it as a buffer near the end where we say, well, let's just sort of have some fun and talk about how we all met and all the royals we've done together, you know. So all of us are capable. I mean, I do my own show. Every one of us can do their own show. So it's about what we can, you know, get cut more than anything, because I know it's gonna be a doddled, you know, filling a 2 hours.
Sounds ace. That it's gonna be not impromptu, but there's a bit of pressure.
We want that. We were saying, look, don't tell me what you're gonna do here. I mean, I've got a couple of bits, and even as we're rehearsing, I'm keeping loads back, and I know everyone else is you know, because we want that reaction. We want you know, us all to just have a laugh, you know, and I think that's what the public want, and we will, you know. I mean, it's to be at the Palladium, you know, it's the best place in the world.
Absolutely, and I don't think for a minute that this will be a one night only. I mean, obviously it'll be a one night only now, as in this particular Palladium date on the 30th of March. Is that right? Saturday the 30th?
That's right. Yeah.
And then, but for sure, you know that it's going to be a belter. You know that you're going to absolutely love it, all of you. And it's guaranteed to, I mean, I think we'll see it again. I hope so.
I think so. We all want it. I mean, long as we get the dates married up next year, then it will happen, because we know it's just a bit of fun. It's exactly how Sinatra and Dean Martin and you know, Sammy Davis, so why they done them, because it is a fun night, you know. We're all capable of doing it, you know, and let's do it together and just see who comes out best.
And is it true you've got this, is the sixth FFR tour in on paper at the moment? We're working out that one.
I done it. I had a few choices. I mean, my last two is called Brian Connolly, the Greatest Entertainer in His Price Range.
So this one's a belter.
Third farewell tour. I was going to do, but I felt it was too pro. Brian Connolly's one man show plus support. I don't know. You know, and the thing is, when I call it Brian's third farewell tour, everyone thought, oh my God, he's doing all these dates. But really, all in all, it's like 12 dates. And it's it's like I say, it's a vocation for me. I will go on holiday, much to the dinner annoyance of my family. We'd be sitting in the lounge at the hotel, and there'd be a piano, bass, and drums. No one speaks English, but that song is in my key. And I will just, and they're going, Dad, don't. And I just have to get up. It's like a Tourette's thing, you know? It's like you guys looking at a beautiful cock. Oh, I don't know. I just need to get my hands on it. And yeah, it's just in me. I just have to entertain. And I think that's what, you know, that makes an audience feel relaxed in your company. Because when I'm on stage, you know, people often say, you know, I feel I belong up there. I'm no good in the real world. I'm useless in the real world. But you stick me in on stage and I know how to sort of take them to another level.
Now then, Brian, on to cars of sorts.
Yes.
It's still in the world of entertainment. And actually, we've got something in common with this particular car because I drove it about 8 years ago at a racetrack. But you got, you know, it was your wedding car and the car was?
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Mm. Yeah. How good is that?
I couldn't believe it. And, of course, I live not far from Pinewood Studios and our wedding reception was at Pinewood Studios and Pinewood Studios is where they've done Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. And I managed to find the car and it was a famous female British Wimbledon player whose name escapes me and it was in the paper that she said, we had Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. So I thought, oh, my God, if I could get that. Yeah. And, yes, we did get it. And I said to the guy, I said, well, what happens if it rains? He said, don't worry, I've got an umbrella. So that was the worry. Then we get in the car, the photos are lovely. I know that during the wedding video, we've got to play Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, the music.
Yeah.
So but we've only, you know, we've not got a big film crew. We've only got me and the video recorder. So we get in the car and we're waving to everyone. Oh, and I know in my head, I'm singing, oh, you pretty chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang. As we go out and go up the road, about 100 yards, I go, tell the guy, so I stop. Then the guy in the video, he had to get in his car, drive round us, drive 200 yards up the road, give us a thumbs up, and we carry on driving. We drive a bit further then, because I know we need all this driving to fill in all the music for the song. So then we go, stop. Then he has to go round, and my wife is getting so annoyed at this. What do we do? I said, we need it for the music to fit in. We can't get enough music. So that was it. That was my moment. And we had Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and it is the highlight of our wedding video.
It's an amazing thing, isn't it? And it's massive, isn't it? You don't realise it in the flesh. God, it's enormous, that thing.
I know. Where is it now? It must be in a museum, Jason. Where is
it? Well, Chris Evans used to own that car, I believe.
Did he?
Because I drove Chris's car, and I think that was the one that you had at your wedding. He's got rid of it now, so I don't know where it's gone. I think it might be in a museum. Maybe Bewley
Somewhere. Because they had a few. They had one that the wings open, one that was all lightweight that flew, but then the proper car one, you know. And, of course, many years later, I go and do Chitty Chitty Bang Bang at the London Palladium, playing Caractacus Potts, and done a full circle. But, yeah, a wonderful. And that turned every head, as you can imagine. That car is so iconic. And I couldn't believe it was on the road. I thought it would be wrapped up in cotton wool somewhere. I didn't know that you could actually hire it, but I'm sure that is not the case anymore.
So listen, take us back to the beginning then, Brian, I reckon. We want to go back to the early days of your motoring, passing your test. Yeah. Were you a first timer and what was the first car?
Mate, I passed first time. It was an absolute breeze. And you know why? I passed in Jersey.
Is that right?
Yeah. I was doing summer season in Jersey. And I'm 62, so I was 21, and you're going to have to work that out. You have to get your line producer to work that out. That many years ago it was. In Jersey, there was only two roads and a couple of there's no roundabouts, just some traffic lights. And if you went at 3:30, you can only take you on one road because the other road's where the kids come out of school. So all you had to learn was one virtually straight road, you know, and that was and so I passed first go. Of course, when they get back to the mainland, that's when the proverbial really hits the fan, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, my God, roundabouts. Oh, my God, lots of cars, you know. But, yes, so I passed first time. And if you failed, you could take it again the next day. You know, there was no queuing. You could go, I think it was like, oh, well, I'll do it again then tomorrow. Yes, okay, what time is it? I'll do it at 3:30, okay. So, so it was a bit of luck. I was 21, so it was quite late for me, you know, and in this business. But it was the window that I had. I was doing summer seasons in Jersey. I was there for about 16 weeks, and I thought, I'm going to capitalise on this and learn how to drive a car.
Talk about car history then. What was your first car?
It was a Citroen. I don't know what it was. It was brown, and my mates all called it the Turdmobile. You know? But it was like a classic, sort of looked like one of those French, not the ones like the corrugated pram turned upside down. You know,
yeah,
like
not a TCV.
A DS. Was it a DS?
Yeah, I'd have to see a picture. It was brown. It was horrible. And look, I'm lucky now. What do I drive now? I drive a Mercedes 350 GLE, and it's all a bit pimped up. It looks the biz. It really does. And my Citroen cost me £200. I can, on an empty tank, I can put £170 in that tank. So it's virtually the same amount of money as my first car cost that I'm putting in the tank now. Oh, my God. But, yeah, the Citroen, and it had three little levers where you go up a bit,
Suspension.
Smoothest ride ever.
Yeah.
You know, but, yeah, I couldn't wait to get rid of it because I used to get so much grief, you know, from friends, and, of course, it was very, very secondhand.
Yeah.
You know.
I'd love one of those now. I mean, they're really sought after, those really old DS style. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
We talk about those a lot, actually, don't we? I mean, there's been a few people on here recently, and we've talked about, because there's not, they're probably the most French-looking car in the world, aren't they? At the risk of stating the bleeding obvious, but they are the most French thing ever, aren't they, those DSs?
Yeah.
And then I went to an Escort, sort of red classic Escort, but then I had probably one of my best cars ever before any Joyrider had one or anything. I had the XR3.
Did you?
Oh, mate. Like a metallic-y blue with the ironing board on the back.
Yeah,
and I'm sure you can fill me in on this, Chase, that if I'd done a lot of miles in it, say, I don't know, 50 miles, doing 50 miles, then I would go to the garage, go to fill it up. As soon as I turned it off, everything, it would go dead. So as soon as I turned it back on, because it like overheated, everything would go off. Not one thing. And then I'd have to wait for the car to cool down completely. Then it would all start up. So I had to do this thing where if I was going the long miles, I'd have to keep it ticking over while I was filling it up. Because if I turned it off, everything would go off. But yeah. I loved my XR3, my cassette recorder, level 42. Whap out the bass, you know. Yeah. You had to have little voice because of that bass. But yeah, my XR3. I mean, look at this glow I have now.
Exactly. You
know. What came after the XR3?
Then I had a Mercedes 190.
Oh,
and it was the first car I had with electric windows. You know, that was the biz. That my dad was like so chuffed. My dad's. You know, he's not here now, God bless, but that was a cabbie.
Oh, right.
That was a black cabbie. Mm. And also he then worked at the BBC for many years, and he was a rigger supervisor but would drive any class of lorry. He'd gone through all those different stages. And he said at one time, he said, legally, I can drive anything on the road, because he was a cab driver as well, except a disabled car. He said that anything else he could at the time. He loved his cars. He was an amazing driver. And I used to just blow me the way he used to reverse into a little gap, like, you know. And of course, the whole thing with lorries, having to turn it one way to go the other way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but he loved the little Merc. That was the first time, whoa, the kid's done good.
Were you driving yourself around at this point then, Brian? Are you sort of, when you're doing, you know, I mean, are you doing stand-up?
Yeah, I always drive. I mean,
but, you know, I guess you're going to different places all around the country and you're driving yourself. Was there an element of, I guess, sort of showing where you were with your peers by what you drove?
Yeah,
was there a bit of that?
If you were doing the nightclubs, things like that, you had to have a nice car. It was all part of the...
Where you were in the whole ladder, aren't you?
Yeah. So if you're pulling up at nightclubs... and all that, it was very much a status symbol as to where you were and how well you were doing within the business, defined by the car you were in, even if you had a driver or things like that, or a personal plate, you know. So those things were always part of the game. So yes, it was always a thing to, you know, you'd have the new Merc, and then I think when I went at BMWs for a little while, 350. I had a Mazda,
right?
A real sporty little Mazda thing.
Mm-hmm. I think we need to reverse slightly and talk to Mr. Connolly about private plates, because he did mention them there, and we were talking about status symbols and cars and whatnot.
Before we go there, I've got to show you my pride and joy.
Right.
And this is mine.
Oh, it's a bubble car. It's a Messerschmitt.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's absolute mint.
Mint.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
Look at it.
Beautiful.
Do you know that, what? I ever since I saw... Do you remember that great Peter Sellers film called The Party?
Yeah.
Well, he's got one in there. And ever since that movie, which I watched, oh, when I was a kid with my mum and dad, I've always lusted after one of those. And I've never seen one in the flesh. Never.
Absolute mint, Jason. I've got a friend of mine who done it. I had it. I bought it years ago. Then, here we go. So I bought it absolute years ago. And then there was a guy in Birmingham, and he had a museum. And his dad... was Jensen, the car Jensen.
Yeah.
You know, with the glass bit that was like one of the first cars, the back that had this sort of arced bit of glass, and no one had that in the back. And he had a museum, and he said, I will take the car off you to keep there to look after. Anyway, many years go by, I'm doing this, that, and the other. My garage is full of stuff, so I'm not really worried about it, but I hear that the actual museum goes bust, but I'm not worried because he says it's there. Anyway, my wife decides to get it back for my birthday, like my, I don't know, my 40th or something, so it was a long time ago. And it's in a wreck. It was just pushed into a corner. It's all manky. It's all blah, blah, blah. So eventually we get it back and decide I've got to do it up. My best mate's son works for Rolls-Royce, and he went, he'll do it as a project. Well, it's gone on and on and on. God bless him. And, of course, having to get the original parts and talking to the Isetta and Trojan clubs, we know it's like they don't even use email. You've got to, like, write letters, and, you know, and then it comes from Germany, or the little part comes from here, and it's like, you know, they have their little magazine. So it's taken forever, and it started off where the floor was a bit gone. So, right, now let's strip it back. No, we've got to dip it now. No, we might as well get that. Oh, let's get it. And it's completely mint, and I don't even want to drive it. But out of any car I've ever had, that turns the head of anyone.
Yeah,
if you drive out anywhere in that.
Yeah.
And then I had it with a company called 99 Cars, which rent out cars for films.
Mm.
And I had it with them for a while, but I felt that it was not being looked after, so I stopped that. And then eventually give it to our friend, and they done it up. And it's taken about 15 years sitting in the garage now. I take it out just to go up and down the road, just to, you know, keep it warmed up. But I love it. And I have no idea... Or something like that. What do you reckon? Something like, if it mint condition, it's 61. I've no idea. I've had a look online, and I don't know. I could possibly get 30 for it, or have I just my head just up in the clouds?
I wouldn't be surprised.
You know, I'd have thought more than that personally. But I don't know.
It's absolute mint. So, but you know, you don't want to get rid of it, but because it's a love keepsake, but an investment, you know, for one day for the kids and things like that.
And what's it drive like? I bet it's just a hoot.
Well, you can smell. Well, it's funny. The heater is like a tube that sort of goes like that for the window, or like that. Like the gears are a blimmin' nightmare. And of course, if you parked near, oh no, it's okay because this has got a reverse. But in other cars, you park near something,
you can't get out.
You can't get out. You're like, you know, but you can just literally lift it up. I mean, it's like a wheelbarrow. And it's got a picture on it that said family car. It was billed as a family car for five people. Two in the back and three on this long seat at the front with dad driving, a child there, a mum there. And it got a little sunroof. You've only got to go around the corner and just go.
Imagine five of you doing 300 miles in one of those.
I know, but of course that whole exhaust fumes and everything, you know.
Because it's a two-stroke, isn't it? It's all a stinker.
Yeah. Oh, and you're virtually sitting on the engine. Absolute death trap. They're all spongy. But, I mean, so iconic and such And it's and it takes up no room whatsoever.
Yeah, you know,
you just have it in a tiny corner of the garage.
Right, we're not letting you off. Let's go back to the personalised number plates, because you were talking about it being a status symbol when you're driving a Merc and you're going to the gigs with the other comics, etc. I reckon you're the sort of man that's had his own personal plates in the past.
I do. I can't buy a new car, so it's always a few years old, so I've had the plates. I must be honest, I didn't put my plates on anything for many, 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 many years. But then suddenly I'm doing EastEnders.
Yeah.
And, of course, you pull up in the car part of everyone, all the other actors' cars there, and I thought, my car, you know, it's a few years old now. I'll put the plate on it. That'd be good. So I put the plate on, so totally to show off in front of Steve McFadden and everyone. But when I was younger, my plate on my Mercedes 740 was FRB1. And if the R looked like Fab1, like Thunderbirds.
Yeah.
But I bought it and people say, FRB1. What does that stand for? And I used to say, fucking rich bastard. So brilliant. I had done it as a joke. I done it, everyone knew. You still got the fucking rich passing? Yeah, I got it on the car. So anyway, the papers now have heard a whisper that this is what he's got on his car, you know, he's showing off and all that game. So my dad said, Brian, you've got to get rid of that, you know, because it's bad. He said, but I found out that Frank Bruno's middle name is Roy. And he contacted Frank, and Frank bought it, and to this day Frank's got it. And whenever I see Frank Bruno, I say, "You still got my number plate?" I never told him that I had it for Frank fucking Rich Barson, but he's got it for Frank Roy Bruno.
Brian, you were talking before about the EastEnders car park. I can imagine it's a bit like a Premier Footballers car park, where you've just got all in your bit like, there's Phil Mitchell's car and there's Ian Beale's car and there's all these different things. Is it like that when you drive in with all these stars from yesteryear?
Yeah. Steve always used motorbike.
Oh, did he?
He's always got a motorbike. He's always on a motorbike. Virtually like a little Lambrette thing, you know, because you don't live too far away. He always cannot get around that he gets recognised on the bike, so he's got all his levers on, all the, you know, the high vis, and really he'll pull up the lights. People go, Steve McFadden, Steve, Phil Mitchell. And really all they see is that, you know. They can spot him, like, just with his eyes. But, all the cars are there. And then, of course, you go onto the lot, which is the square, and then they've got all these cars that just sit there all the time, you know, and they sort of jig them about. There's a specific guy there called, Leo, so his name escapes me, I'm sorry, but he sort of takes care of all the cars and then, you know, milk floats and cabs and everything else. They have a huge fleet, and then round about they've also got all the police cars and ambulances. But, yeah, there's a lot of cars there.
And is it a full-size set? Because years ago I was up in Manchester-ish and went on Coronation Street, and their street is like three-quarter size.
Yeah. Mm.
It's very strange.
It was, but about 2 years ago, it took them 8 years, but they rebuilt it. They rebuilt a complete set. The actual original set has now been locked down, and the new square is sort of, a quarter of a mile away, you know, and they rebuilt it, and also they put in electric points and things like that, but it's all real. And it is wide enough now, because that was an issue that they did struggle with, getting two cars around the square you know, once other cars are parked up, you know. So, that was made bigger. But it is iconic when you're there. And, of course, you know, you're in the Vic. And even, I mean, I was there 2.5 years, but, you know, even right at the end, you know, you're saying again, oh, God, I'm here with Kathy Bill and, you know, Phil Mitchell in the Vic. And I ended up marrying Kathy Bill. I ended up, you know, and Gillian Telford is the nicest actress I've ever worked with, and I've told her that so many times. And it really is like a speeding train. When you get on that, it's like a roller coaster ride, you know, because, you know, you're always fighting against the clock. We're doing 4 episodes a week, every week.
Yeah.
That is a lot of content. So, you've got to be on your game, and you know, even the admin side of knowing when you're going in and what you should be learning, and the new stuff that's coming up and where you should be within your own sort of learning process, because that's the thing, you are learning all the time. And like, you'll come home, there's always homework. Mm. And it amazes me, some of the actors on there that just sort of look at it and go, yep,
and I'm going, bang, they've got it. And is it expected that you should have it in your head and be on point within one or two takes?
Well, yeah, no, you should be on point first take. You know, you'll get three goes at it, possibly. The directors will never move away if they're not happy with us, if we've not touched it, and, you know. But, you know you've got to hit the floor running. Everyone messes up. We all mess up. We've all got, it's not as though it's a play. You've had weeks to rehearse it, weeks to block it all out. You know that whatever you're doing, it's the first time you've ever done it, you know, that can pull on the pressure. But I did say to Natalie Cassidy once, I said, oh, my God, this is right, early days. How do you do this? She said, oh, it gets easier, Brian. You know, that short-term memory is like a muscle. And the more you do it, and I would say it took me 2 years to get to that point. And some people, you know, obviously a lot quicker, but because I'm getting old. But I was like that in the end, where I could really be on top of it in a very short amount of time. It amazes me, some of the work that people do in that, and the level, the standard of acting, and the level that it's at. In sometimes, and I'm very aware of, a short amount of time, you look at the scene, you go, oh my God, they only done that twice, and you just think, unbelievable.
Brian, your character then is in prison, so you could still return? Is that right? You're still open-ended?
I suppose so, yeah. You know, I mean, Rocky, God bless him, it was an insurance scam, and he did set fire to the CAF, this iconic CAF in Albert Square, and it was amazing. It took us a week to film it, because they didn't just set fire to it. Of course, all the gas went and the whole place blew up. Someone ran in. Because I thought someone was in there. Then my character's, oh my God, someone's in there, and it's all my fault, but I hadn't told anyone. So I ran in, fire engines. It was amazing. But anyway, Rocky done it for arson. And of course, eventually he was shot. And it was a big farewell at Christmas, which I really enjoyed. You know, the whole thing of being, you know, in prison is, it's open. So who knows? I think he's gone down for 10 years. So that's a long time on him. But he might come out with good behaviour and all that. But like you said, it is open. And who knows? Never
good
say
stuff.
No.
Now then, Brian, me and Dave always believe that music and cars are just perfect together. So imagine your fantasy drive, please. So where are you? Where are you going? Ooh. What are you listening to? Ooh. And most importantly, what you're driving? Can be anywhere in the world.
Oh, God, you put that on me, yeah. Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, dear, no, I'm really stuffed now because I've got so many cars, so many songs, so many roads. I went on Route 66 once. That was a waste of time. It was just all trees. I thought I was going to see open land and all that. It was just like, it's going to see anything along the way. but where would I go? Oh, I don't know. I'd go to Snowdonia, somewhere like that. That's in Wales, isn't it? You know, and I'd be in a nice camper van. The weather would be lovely. It'd be like a real nice camper van, so that at any point I can just stop, make a nice cup of tea. Look at the views, beautiful. No cars up there. Roads are really perfect and lovely, because we did go up there in a camper van. No, we haven't got a camper van, but we hired one. Mm. Those really nice VWs that are worth God knows more than a Mercedes, than a Rolls Royce. But we rented that, and we had such a lovely time there. But I suppose it's not inducive to what you normally have people saying.
But it's perfect.
I like that, and a little bit of Mr. Blue Skies, you know. It'd be goo, 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 sun is shining in the sky. You know, that's there. I've got the shades on. And my wife there, lovely Emery, kids, just the wife. And we've got some sandwiches and all that. And then we go and see a lay-by on the site, and then looking down at the hill is everything. Oh, God, it's in Wales. And you know, we're not going there because I can't say it. And we're just, you know, stopping. I don't want it to be like hell-raising. you know, I want
that's
to.
That's perfect.
I want to let it marinate and enjoy it.
Mm.
And what's in your sandwiches?
I think chicken coronation.
Oh, what a classic.
You know, I'm in the snow dome here, yes. Camp van with the wife. Yeah. Chicken coronation, which listening to ELO, Mr. Blue Skies.
I mean, it's almost perfect, isn't it, Jason? And I think on that note of just visual and scenic perfection, I think you need to take us out.
Chicken coronation, what a cracker, hey? Well, sadly, that's it for this week's Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Dave, as always, thanks to you. But a huge thanks to our special guest this week, the one and only Mr. Brian Connolly.
God bless you guys. I'll keep listening. I love the show. And thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Brian, thank you. It's been a pleasure. You can see Brian on his third farewell tour in Coventry, Birmingham, Bromley, Milton Keynes and Salford, and of course the Palladium show on the 30th of the month with Bradley Walsh, Shane Ritchie and Joe Pasquale. Google it for details, even though they're all sold out. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Jason Plater, at David Vitti, and if you've liked what you've heard, feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button and share on all your socials.
Thanks for listening, guys, and we'll see you next week. I'm off to the kitchen. Chicken coronation awaits!